Welcome back to Behind the Play. My name is Alex Adams, and today I'm joined by one of the best pickleball players in the city of Ottawa, the one and only Ian Mendez. You're not too shabby as a journalist, but I mean your pickleball skills might be just a bit higher
Oh,
than
I don't deny that. I think if you ask me, am I a better
that.
pickleball player or journalist, I think I would lean towards pickleball.
Yeah, exactly. I still have nightmares of your left-handed backhands from us playing, so it's tough out there. But
The ambidextrous is the way to go.
I just maybe get started a bit up with this Senators team, and it's been a lively off season. Maybe just let's go back a little bit to Travis Green, because you had some pretty good questions you had to him. And just, your overall thoughts about the Sens hiring Green when he wasn't really the fans' number one choice, but for Steve Staios, he says he was.
Yeah, and look, I understand the frustration in the marketplace. I really do. And because this isn't a 1 or 2 or 3 year cycle for this fan base, it's now 7 years since they've made the playoffs. So when you create expectations, and I'm not talking about the organization, I'm saying in the fan base about who you think the next coach should be or could be. And then it doesn't end up being the person that you think it could or should be, you're going to be disappointed. And but you have to allow the fans to be angry and vent. Like, what do you like? I guess my point is really there's nothing that the Senators, I think, can say or do between now and October that will convince anybody. I do think, though, there's been a bit of a slight shift in the tone when you listen to some people who said, maybe on day one they were full of rage. Then they heard Travis Green speak. Then they kind of looked around at the other options, said, "Okay, well, okay, I'm willing to give him a chance." And really, that's all you can really do is give the guy a chance. I look at it and I think, Rick Tocchet, when he went into Vancouver, his winning percentage was about the same. We've talked about a lot of guys that have, they've needed second, third chances to find their spot and find their groove, and so. I understand the frustration. I understand their rationale for it, for hiring the guy. I mean, he like if you close your eyes and you listen to the Travis Green introductory press conference and you told people that was Craig Berube speaking, you'd Ottawa fans would be excited. They're like, that's all the things that we said we needed. We needed somebody to come in and be a little bit more of a disciplinarian and be a little bit more forcing accountability, all those things. He said all the things you wanted to hear as a fan. It just didn't come from the guy that you wanted it to come from. So I get why there's anger in the marketplace, and really, there's nothing that we can sink our teeth into until we get to training camp and until we get to October.
What do you make of maybe the idea of not just chasing the big name, but the best person for the hire? I mean, it's obviously you want the best person to lead your team, but sometimes I think people think, oh, let's just get the big name, but that might not be the best fit.
Well, I mean, if you look at that from a roster perspective, what have they done in the last couple of years, right? They've sort of chased names maybe that weren't essentially great fits in hindsight, but they chased them and they got them and then it didn't work out, right? So, hey, I'm willing to give them a chance. I think though, the unfortunate thing for Travis Green, I think a lot of coaches get a grace or a honeymoon period. And I'm not saying that he won't. I just don't know it'll be as long as most fans get. Like most fans, like, I give the guy a year, like we'll see where we're at. I think for Ottawa fans, there's going to be an automatic sort of referendum after 20 games. Is this better than the 20 game starts they had under DJ Smith? Is this different? Does it feel different? But that's fine. Like I think Travis Green, having played in Toronto, having coached in Vancouver, I think he gets it. And I think with Staios too, he played in Calgary, played in Edmonton, worked a little bit with the Leafs. Like, I think they get it. Part of the deal, if you're going to take a job in a Canadian market, you have to understand the runway isn't as long as if you took a job in Tampa or Nashville or Carolina or wherever you want to pick. It's just not going to. You're not going to get the same amount of grace with the fans, but just everything that's happened in this market in the last 7 years, people are itching for a winner. And they're itching to see some tangible results because I think most people still think that the core of this team and the roster is good enough to at least compete for a playoff spot. Nobody's sitting here saying you better be a Stanley Cup contender this year. I don't think that's the fan base is just saying we want to be a legitimate playoff contender. And to do that, we've learned you can't trip out of the gate. You can't go 8-10-2 to start the season and expect that you're going to be a wild card team.
Do you think they just hired Green because he always had great starts in Vancouver? Is that just the magic fix? I'm obviously being tongue in cheek here,
No,
but
yeah, no, but like if you do think about one of the sort of things about Travis's reputation is it's a hard training camp, and it's a demanding. We're gonna set the tone. We're gonna set the pace so that when the regular season starts, you're
yeah.
good to go. And for whatever reason, I still think DJ Smith, for what he was given and whatever, like he did the best that he could, and he was absolutely unequivocally, in my opinion, the right coach for this team in 2020, 2021, and even into 2022. I would argue, like, if you think about the year that Stützle had 90 points, like he unlocked the offensive potential in a lot of guys. He got them feeling good about themselves, playing with confidence, and so there's some merit, like there's a lot of that merit. But one of the I guess drawbacks to him was out of the gate, the team wasn't quite sharp and as focused. And every year they'd come out, and every year it was the same thing. And so, yeah, I think Travis Green at least has the reputation of they get off to good starts in Vancouver, or they did usually when he was the coach, the tough training camp. And I think they just need an organizational shift in philosophy, and that everybody needs to sort of recalibrate their brains. And so you get a guy that's known for cracking the whip a little bit in September. I don't think that's the worst thing in the world, as long as he still communicates. You can't, in the year 2024, when you're dealing with young athletes, you can't be an old school Mike Keenan, Pat
No.
Burns. It doesn't work. But you also can't be so friendly buddy buddy that that it doesn't work either. Like there's a happy medium, and this goes for teaching, coaching, parenting, all of those things. You got to find there's a little narrow line there, a tightrope you can walk, where you got to be tough, but you got to be fair, and you got to be a bit of a disciplinarian, but you also got to be supportive. And I think listening to Travis, it sounds like he knows that that's the line he needs to walk.
My kind of question will be, and obviously we'll see it play out on the ice, is just how does this young team, be, how are they affected by disciplinarian? Will they rise to the challenge, or like they have to start the season and in a lot of ways not, right? And I think that's going to be really interesting, just that culture shock. And does it take a year, and it's like Vancouver, and within 6 months heading into the next season, they're a great team, or is it going to be years? I we won't find out, but that's the thing that I'm maybe a bit pessimistic about, is just years of just laid back and being okay with getting your points and maybe too buddy buddy with the coach. And yeah.
But I think for the most part, and athletes are, this is really true of athletes in particular, but I think just of most young people, they want to be pushed, they want to be challenged, they want to have the best brought out in them. And I think all of those guys know that there's another gear or level they can get to. And but this is a critical year, I think, in the Senators' competitive cycle. Like I really do. I think they have 1 year to show to Claude Giroux that this is working. They have 1 year, Brady Tkachuk, like, and I'm not trying to say this to create, I'm not trying to create rumblings or create, like, I'm very mindful of the market and how they feel. But if you're Brady Tkachuk and you play next year and you don't even sniff the playoffs, that's 8 years. You're going to be pretty much halfway through your career. You're going to look at your brother. You're going to see that he's just continuing to sort of shine on the big stage of the conference finals. And I don't blame, like, at that point, I wouldn't blame him for saying, you know what, it's not working. But I think for the whole thing, this is a huge year. Because if it doesn't work, everybody needs to go back to the drawing board and say, let's slightly detonate this thing. It's not working. And I've said this for a long time. There becomes a precarious point where you fall into the Buffalo Sabres, and the Panthers went through this for a long time. The Oilers went through it in what people used to call the decade of darkness, where you just can't shake it. And it's nobody's one person's fault, but it has to change. And in Edmonton, you know, they finally, you know, Taylor Hall, it had to happen. Like, he had to go. In Buffalo, Jack Eichel, it had to happen. He had to go. You know, Reinhardt, same thing. And it becomes polarizing because the fans feel like, hey, like, you didn't stick it out and you didn't want. And I understand that perspective, but I also understand the athlete's perspective. Like, you want to win. You have a finite career as a professional athlete. And I think if you give a place 7, 8, 9 years and it's not working, I don't blame you. I'm not going to blame you, but this is a huge year for this program, I think, to convince a lot of people that this is the right group.
Could you argue that last year was the year where you needed to be convinced of this group being the right group and they failed miserably, and now it's time for Steos to detonate, as you said? Or
You can make that argument that the core has been together a long enough time to say we are what we are. But the mitigating thing, and listen, you were at pretty much every home game. You saw it. The goaltending really submarined them. Like, and so I'm that's the only thing that's leaving me a little pause for, hey, let's blow this sucker up, is, you know, you could almost see it was like a clear line. When they got 900 save percentage or better, they were like, what, 37, 2-2, something like that. And then when they didn't get 900 save percentage, they were like 2-37 or whatever, you know, whatever it was. And you just have to ask yourself, if you got better goaltending or just league average goaltending, you know, if they did, I think that they're in that sort of
Buffalo.
turtle derby with Washington and the Islanders and Detroit and Buffalo, all those teams that were fighting Pittsburgh, that were fighting for those two spots in the final 2 weeks. I think if you look at the rosters of all those teams, you know in your heart Ottawa should have or could have been there. And they were submarined by you know, pedestrian or at worst, you know, worst goaltending. So that's my only, like, kind of, hey, before you detonate the entire roster this summer, what would that roster look like with a little bit of better goaltending? With a little bit more structure, a little bit more stability. You know, I personally believe in the real tight core of, like, Tkachuk, Stützle, and
Sanderson.
Sanderson in particular, and then, you know, a couple of the ancillary guys around that. But those three, you can win with them. Like, they're not losers. They're not. They're not like they are, but losing culture becomes baked in at some point, and you just feel for the athlete at some point. Like, these guys, Tkachuk in particular, I think leaves it all out on the line. Like, nobody should ever say that guy has quit on the program or quit on the nothing. Like, he lays it out on the line. And so, to me, if you can't win with that guy, then I don't know what to say. But he, like, you know, it's the old, I got 99 problems, but Brady's not one of them. And that's what the situation is in Ottawa. They got to figure out, how do they get the best out of that group and win with them? Because I don't think you can do this much longer into these, especially into Tkachuk and Chabot and these guys that have been there a long time. You can't just lose in perpetuity. You can't spend 10 years of your life never tasting the Stanley Cup playoffs.
So if you're Steve Steos this off season and you're trying to end that the misery and the perpetuity of losing, what are you trying to do? Like you mentioned goaltending, and that's a bit of a precarious situation for the Senators. Obviously, Korpisalo's on that big long contract. Forsberg has 1 year left, but he was very bad as well last year. Like, what do they do? Is it that 1A, 1B type goalie, an Nedeljkovic, Swa in free agency? Do they go use maybe that other first round pick on a Markstrom or an Allmark or maybe even a Saros if he's, well, what do you think that they do there?
Well, I don't know, like, the Saros, like Markstrom and Saros, like those are going to be big asks, right? And you're going to have to offload contracts. You're going to do a lot of gymnastics. I still kind of believe in, like, weirdly, Forsberg in particular. I've always thought he was a good goalie. Like, I really do. And he just had a bad year. But he's always been a pretty good goalie, in my opinion. He Korpisalo, just what was really tough was it felt like every night he gave up
One bad goal.
one bad one, and it often came early in the game. And the question is not so much how do I feel about him, how do you feel about him? It's how do the 18 guys in the room feel? Like, do they feel like those guys can win them a game? Because it's a tough feeling, I think, as an athlete, as a hockey player, when you go into a game and in the back of your mind, you're like, man, we're probably already down 1-0. Like,
Yeah.
it's hard. It's hard to get over. And the Oilers went through this with Jack Campbell, and they had to make the really difficult decision to send him to the AHL. It just wasn't working. I don't think we're at that point with Korpisalo yet, but
Next
it
year.
shows you that, okay, well, if you have another 2 or 3 bad months, like I still like Korpisalo. Like, I still think he has enough upside. It's not the craziest contract in the world either. The term was always the issue, not the AAV. Like, the AAV was 5, 4 million. You're not paying
No.
5, 6, 7 million. And there's a lot of teams in that, like Pittsburgh, I think, is in that boat with Jari, right? And other, like Edmonton with Campbell. Like, there's a lot of teams that are kind of in this situation. But yeah, I would explore, if I'm stale, so I would explore the goalie market. I would try and look at, is there another guy to bring in? And maybe we have to make it a three-headed monster. And if it doesn't work for one of those guys, we're gonna have to send you to Belleville. I'm sorry, but that's kind of how it works. Is maybe, and then maybe that's the way to go. Is maybe you find, that $2.5 million goalie that's out there, so that you can still say, like, they're only spending, and I think it's only what, 6.75 million on the cap in goaltending next year. That's what a lot of teams would spend on just a number one guy. So if you say to yourself, okay, like, we're willing to allocate 8.5 million to goaltending next year, what would that look like? Like, would that be adding another? I don't know if you can get Laurent Brossoit, probably not for
Not,
like
I don't think you
not at that price, but is there another
lying.
Alex Lyon type of, like give me a guy, like hey, suddenly Vancouver's got an interesting situation. I don't know what Shelov's is now. I wouldn't be getting rid of him if I'm Vancouver, but
No.
do they suddenly have a situation where, I don't know, Casey DeSmith or whatever it is? You got to look at those types of scenarios and see, is there a spot where we can maybe pluck a guy at 1.5 million to 2.5 million, bring him in and say, guys, duke it out. And I don't care, the best two of you are going to play. And the third guy, I'm sorry, you're going to either be in Belleville or you're going to be riding up in the press box.
With that, obviously, another name that's maybe bandied about in trade rumors is Jakob Chychrun. He seemed at the, I don't, you weren't there, Ian, but at the season-ending press conference, I'm sure you saw it, that he didn't seem very optimistic in terms of returning to Ottawa. Said, I don't really know at this point. What do you think happens there? And is that just kind of where Steos is forced to make a move because Chychrun has 1 year left on his deal, and you probably can't play three left shot defensemen who are making a lot of money on 3D pairings.
Yeah, and I got the sense from Jacob. I had a good conversation with him just after the trade deadline in San Jose, and I could sense his disappointment and his frustration. Like I think for him, he went through 18 months of stuff being said about him and trade rumors in Arizona, and I think he finally came to Ottawa. He's like, okay, I can exhale, I can breathe. No more. And it's almost like, I think he's got a little bit of, recurring here we go again syndrome of, I can't believe I'm back and people are talking about where I'm going to be, and it doesn't look like I'm going to be here long term. And so from that perspective, I understand his disappointment, his frustration. I think he genuinely appreciated being back here, being part of the community, being part of his family again. But I don't blame the athlete here. It never was an ideal fit. Like if you were gonna pick a defenseman, the profile would probably look a little bit more like a right shot D, right? He never got prime power play minutes here, like where he was constantly the number one guy. Like I guess my point would be, if I'm another team, if I could offer Jakob Chychrun a chance to play on PP1, I kind of think like he's got the potential. I'm not saying it's a lock it in, but I think he's got the potential to be a 20 goal, 50 point guy on the back end. He's got his defensive liabilities and warts, as many offensive minded defensemen do. But if there's a team out there that thinks, okay, we can give you a spot to run our power play, and you can concentrate on the offense, and we'll get you a defensive minded partner, I think he's a capable top four in the league that way. But it just, unfortunately for him, Sanderson is the guy in Ottawa. And like he's gonna be for this franchise what Miro Heiskanen is for Dallas. And hey, I'm gonna play 25 minutes a night and I'm the guy. And when the game we're winning or losing by a goal, I'm the guy with 2 minutes left. It's not even a question. Like he's the top
No.
dog. Like, it's not even close. He's that good. So now you start to say, okay, well, if he's gonna be our top guy, he's gonna play 25 minutes a night. That leaves 35 minutes on the left side. How are we going to allocate those? And if Thomas Chabot is going to be there and he's taken 19 or 20 of those minutes, now what are we left with? Now we're really looking at just a straight up third pairing, 14 minutes, 15 minute night, D-man on the left side. That's not Jakob Chychrun. Like you're not paying a guy 4.6 million to play on your third pair. I don't think so. I think there should be a market for him. He showed some durability this year. He played 82 games. You're not gonna. This is one thing that's real clear, though, Alex. You're not gonna recoup
No.
the value that you gave up, which was what, a first and 2 seconds.
Yes. Yeah.
You're not gonna get that. So it's a sunk cost. Like you got to go into this and say it's a sunk cost. Oh, I'm not trying to recoup the value. It's not gonna happen.
You think there could be a hockey trade? I mean, I'm very much in the Jets world, and there's a lot of Ehlers for Chychrun. Kind of, you fix my problem, I fix yours a little bit. Do you expect there to be a hockey trade? Maybe not that trade, of course, but just, or is it more getting assets? Because the Sens system is so bereft of talent, because Dorion traded all those first and second round picks, as we just alluded to.
I love the idea of Ehlers. The only problem is, like, he's in the same boat, right? Like, he's 1 year away from UFA. And I really like Nick Ehlers. Like, I think he's a
He's
super
something.
talented guy, but you got to ask yourself, what's that next contract going to look like? I don't think it fits in the budget here. I don't like. So if you're saying, okay, like we can't find a spot for Chychrun, like if we're just going to do it, okay, you trade your problem for mine and we'll revisit at the trade deadline. Sure, maybe. But, I always think like I'm old enough where like in the 90s, in before the salary cap era, and even early in the salary cap time, you would get these awesome hockey trades.
Hossa for Heatley.
Heatley for Hossa. And that was at the start of the cap era. But even like before then, you would get these awesome hockey trades where Mark Recchi is traded in a trade for John LeClair, or like there's a three-way trade and like Rick Tocchet's going here and Paul Coffey's going there. And it was awesome. Like hockey trades happen, 2 for 2, 1 for 1, all of that. It is very rare now. You get the infamous Taylor Hall, Adam
Those 30
Larson.
minutes.
It was 1 for 1, but you don't get a ton of those. So for Ottawa too, like they don't want to be capped out again next. And they've only got about 12 million to spend. And my guess is, given where they were last year, they don't want to spend right to the dollar of the cap. Like my guess is they're going to be a little bit below the cap, give themselves some flexibility. Plus, I think the way the contracts are structured for, say, Shabbat, I want to say Kachuk, and I want to say maybe even Korpisalo,
I think
the
they're.
real dollars are more than the cap hit, which means there's a good chance in real dollars they're going to be spending like 90 million next year. So I think that if you can trade Chychrun and either do it for some cap flexibility or at least get a guy back that plays the right side or something at a similar price, sure. But the problem is on an Ehlers, you're just asking for an, you're kicking the can down the road and you don't know where you're going to be in 18 months from now.
Yeah, and with that, the Sens do have another first round pick, and maybe if they get Chychrun, they might have another one. Do you expect Steos to maybe be more active in the trade market just because of the lack of cap space rather than go UFA shopping this summer?
Yeah, like I think you got to understand, like Ottawa's never been, with the exception of Claude Giroux, who came here for different reasons other than, I mean, no, I shouldn't say different. Like Claude thought the program was on the uptick, and he, but he was coming home. Like, it's an easier sell. The UFA market, until, like, once this program turns around, and it will, it becomes a place where guys do like to live here. Like, if you think about it, all of the guys that, a lot of guys who left Ottawa, Mark Stone lives here in the summer. Erik Karlsson comes back for good chunks of the summer. The guys actually like the city itself. Like, no one's ever said, I don't like the city. So, but the only way to lure the UFAs, you got to do it with a winning culture. Like, you're not going to lure good players to Ottawa when you're in a 7-year playoff drought. So, yeah, I think the UFA market, unless you have some familiarity, and that's maybe where you hope the Travis Green, Chris Tanev connection is that strong enough. Does that help? Like you're trying to, like, I know that they would love Chris Tanev, and who wouldn't? Like, there's probably 25 teams in the league like that would want Chris Tanev in the UFA market. So I think the UFA market is a good spot to go fishing, but they're not going to get the big fish. It's the smaller pond. That you the Dylan DeMello type of pond that maybe you can fish in and attract somebody there.
A Dylan DeMello pond. I'm just thinking of and pondering what that would look like.
Pondering.
Pondering.
Yeah.
I guess, we haven't spoken to it directly, but this team does need another right shot defenseman. And how likely do you think they'll fix that hole this summer and compared to maybe just filling in with some players that can maybe fill in the gap for the present time, but won't really do it long term.
Well, it's right now when you look at their depth chart, the only guy that's a natural right that you just say lock it in for sure and you know exactly where he slots in is Artem Zub. I like Bernard Docker, but he's not top four right now. But maybe he could play as your six. Like, I really like him. I think he's got a lot of attributes that you want in a modern defenseman. Like, he defends pretty well. He can move the puck. He's like your classic modern defenseman on the right side. I would be fine if he's your sixth guy, or third pairing guy on the right, but you need to fill that hole, like, in between. Travis Hamonic was a guy that they brought in, and if he was just a third pairing guy all of last year, fine. But the problem is, you signed him in 2 years, and but Travis has been a really good soldier, and he's been a guy that is, I think, has had a really positive attitude and tried to handle a tough situation last year with the amount of dignity and class that is required. And so I don't know, like for him, I don't know if a buyout is something that they would consider, or you can't send him to Belleville. You can't do it. He's got no move clause, and that's the athlete's right, is he signed it. So really, you have to either decide, is he going to be our seventh guy? And if he's going to be your seventh guy, what's that conversation like with him? Like, I think he's an upbeat enough guy that he could do it. Nick Holden, kind of had to do that at the end of his time in Ottawa. He kind of morphed into a 6'7" guy, and he had the right temperament, he had the right attitude, and he did it. That's a conversation they may have to have, but yeah, they have to go out and get, you know, one of Tanev or DeMelo or somebody that you think you can slide. Like Tanev would be the ideal, right? You put Tanev with Shabbat, for example. What's that going to look like?
Such a good pairing.
Right. It's
On
in
paper.
theory, it should be good, right? So we'll see what happens there. But yeah, I think they have absolutely have one spot to figure out there on the right side.
I know you spoke to Shane Pinto, about his future in Ottawa. I think I was actually there for a bit while you were doing the interview. Just maybe speak to what you think will happen there, and how surprised are you that there hasn't been a deal signed, that he's now at the World Championships and technically, could be liable to getting hurt and then affecting his contract. But it all indications, speaking with him, he wants to get a deal done, but maybe the difference between the Senators and Pinto side is maybe on the term and the AAV. Where do you see those negotiations at right now?
Yeah, I think it's always, to me, going to be a really difficult negotiation only because I could see both ways here. I could see a long-term deal, I could see a bridge deal. The only thing that Shane has been pretty adamant is he doesn't want a one-year deal. He doesn't want to, like, hey, let's do 1 year at $2.5 million and come back. He's just a young man who wants a little bit more security, a little bit more clarity. I think last offseason was really tough on him. It started with the contract stuff. It obviously morphed into the gambling related suspension. And I think it was very, very trying for him. I think he just wants to, like, in an ideal world, he would sign for 5 or 6 years. But I mean, even if he can get 3 years, I think, you know, that would be great. The problem is, what's the AAV? The problem is, what does our depth chart look like in 2027? Where's Norris? Where's Greg? Where's Pinto? Like, where do these guys all slot in? And these are questions that they have to ask themselves, because at some point in time, you got to give Ridly Greig a new contract. And at some point in time, that you have to figure out where everybody slots in, and you're paying them accordingly, right? You don't want to pay, okay, maybe Shane Pinto is worth 5.5 or 6. But if you see him as your third line center in 2 years or 3 years, maybe that doesn't make sense for everybody. And if I'm Pinto, I'm not signing a 6 year deal at 3.5, because I think I have more than that to give. I don't see myself as a, number three center. And this could end up being like one of those Jordan Staal situations where you're like, hey man, I'm too good to be a 3C. And we'll see, right? Like it's gonna be really fascinating to see. I'm not shocked that it's not done, because I've always felt like it's gonna be a little bit
But true.
complicated. My hope is that it doesn't get tenuous, and I think it's far too early for that. We're in the third week of May. My time to be where I'll ring a little alarm bell, I'm gonna say like mid-July. I'm gonna say, if this isn't done in like the third week of July, I'd be willing to say, okay, now this is getting to the point where I think the player is probably feeling a little antsy. Because if you get to the mid-July, at that point, they should know exactly what their cap situation looks like for next year and beyond. Free agency is done, draft is done, trading is done. You should know where he fits in. And if it's not done by the third week of July, okay, I'll be willing to say we might have ourselves a little bit of a red flag here. But until then, I wouldn't say too much. And one thing is, like, both sides here, Steve Staios is a vault. Louis Gross is a vault. Neither of those guys divulge a lot. They're not going to negotiate too much through the media, if at all. So I think where I'll also be concerned, if you start to hear terms and dollars and things, then I might be a little worried, because I'm like, okay, now the sides are starting to maybe try to posture a little bit publicly, and but we haven't heard too much of that. And so I wouldn't worry about. I think Louis Gross has a reputation of being really tough but fair. And he goes to bat for his clients. But this is such a unique case, because Shane Pinto has basically missed the better part of 2 seasons one for a shoulder, one for a gambling related suspension. There's not very many players who are comparables for him at his age, at his games or whatever. So this is going to be a really interesting one.
Is it almost where the Senators with Pinto, and you alluded to it, that Jordan Staal dilemma, where they, the one place they do have so much talent is at the center position,
Right.
just makes it so complicated. And also, if you're Steos, what do you make of Josh Norris in this negotiation? Because he obviously has the talent to be a number two center in the league, but he's been that unfortunately just keeps getting plagued by those nagging shoulder injuries, which is really tough to see. Where do you see him right now within this organization, and maybe how that impacts Steos, not just
Yeah, it's a huge question mark because he's a guy that is on his $7.95 million cap hit, and he will be for the foreseeable future. Like he's through 2030 that he signed to that deal, so he's locked in as part of your core. You can't move him, or I don't see any scenario where the other teams are like, yeah, I'll take him, but he's got the potential. Like for me, I believe in him. I feel bad for him because the shoulder, this has just got to be, I almost think it's tougher mentally than it is physically. Like like Josh has always been a guy that those fitness testing and training, he always scores really well. So I'm not worried about the physical aspect to him. I've seen guy Tarasenko is a great example. He had three shoulder surgeries. He's still come back and he's had 30 goal years. It's the mental wear and tear that I worry about with Norris, because I think he's legitimately, when he's going, he's a 25 to 30 goal guy in this league, and maybe he could be a little bit more, whatever. But I think when he's healthy and going, that's pretty good. So you have to ask yourself though, like, yeah, where does he slot in, and are you willing to move him to the wing? Like, do you think that, okay, well, maybe lessen responsibility on faceoffs, lessened, responsibility, maybe because he's a natural trigger man too, right? Like he's not your
Playmaker.
prototypical playmaking guy. He's more of a finisher, so to speak, right? Maybe it makes sense to move him at times to the wing and put him on the wing, and then if that's the case, okay, well then maybe you do see Pinto as your number two center. But the number one thing is you got to hope that he's ready to come back and have it ready to go for September, because last year obviously there were some false starts for him, and I'm sure that there'll be some question marks around how he's doing in the summertime.
One other player for the Senators who had a bit of a, down season for his standards was Tim Stützle. Where do you see his game at in terms of, is he closer to that 90-point guy that we saw 2 years ago, or is he closer to that point per game, which is still pretty good, 70 points or 72 points in 75 games, but not that maybe upper echelon of score in this league?
No, I think it's the first. I think he's got 90 point, and maybe I think if you say a guy's got 90 point potential, you may as well go ahead and say he's ahead and say he's got 100 point potential. I still think this the arrow is pointing up for him. He's young enough where there's still a lot of room for him to grow. You go back and look at like Nate MacKinnon, and look at Nate's third year in the league and for like. He took a bit of a step back, and there was a couple seasons there where suddenly he wasn't even a point a game guy, right? And then now he's blossomed, and it takes time. And this year for Tim, he was banged up for a good chunk of the year, and he played through a lot of stuff. And I think when you go back and you look at hindsight and say, okay, the guy was banged up and he didn't quite have his A shot, and he didn't quite physically have all the tools in his at his disposal, and he still was kind of a 70 point guy. That's not bad, and there's a lot of room to grow for him. And I like the one thing I like about him is he's got a real like he's got an internal engine that goes, and it goes and goes and goes, and he's a really emotional guy, but that's okay too. Like I think when you're a lot of people are really emotional in their 20s, and it's about trying to find your footing in life and finding where you are. I think he just looked like to me like an athlete whose confidence was zapped at times. And so somebody's got to get to him and kind of just say to him, like you know you're Tim Stützle, right? Like you know that, right? Like I think he needs to be reminded a little bit. Like it's funny because I think people would look at him and sometimes the moves he tries to make, and they'd be like, that guy's too cocky or he's overconfident. It's quite the opposite. I think he sometimes this season kind of lacked the confidence,
Got down on himself.
and he was down on himself, and he had a really tough year, I think, mentally. And I think, you know, one thing that, you know, we probably didn't talk enough about was, you know, this was the first year of an $8 million contract. Like like were there some burdens on him, some pressures on him? I think so. And it's only natural, but he's 22 years old. Like there, you know, he's absolutely a guy you can win with. And I think he just needs a little bit of confidence to be injected into him, like he had 2 years ago when he had the 90 points.
How likely do you think he's a 100-point guy next season? And maybe even do you know what the franchise record is in points, Ian? I feel like you should.
It's 105 for the Heater and Alfie, right?
Yeah,
Or
for
just Heater.
just
Heater was 105. Yeah.
do you think he's in that close to that range this season?
Next season, no. Like, but if you told me that at some point he would break that record, I wouldn't say that's impossible. I think it would be a little much to say next year, but like if you told me in, you know, 2027, Tim
Yeah.
Stützle had 108 points. Yeah, that wouldn't shock me.
I want to transition a little bit to you've written a lot about Michael Ian Lowry and had just an interview today about him and the arena deal, but also you had a previous the same interview but another story about him as under the in his first year in charge as the Senators owner. Maybe knowing him pretty well and seeing how the season played out and the year played out with a lot of things coming up, how would you maybe judge Ann Lauer's first year as owner, and does it feel like it's the right fit between him and Ottawa?
Yeah, like to answer the second part of your question, absolutely. Like I think his personality is very much suited to this community. Like he is by nature understated, a little bit quiet at times, but also kind of sneaky funny. And like I almost think that that's the perfect description of Ottawa. Like we're somewhat quiet, but like we're a sneaky fun town. And I think he fits in well. Like one of the things he told me was like he really felt like he fit in the community. Like they bought a house here. He's invested in the community. You know, he's a guy that grew up in Montreal, has spent most of his sort of corporate life in the GTA. And so, you know, this is a new place for him, but I think he feels really welcomed. I think he's had really positive interactions with people. I think people have been really kind to him, and I think the way he speaks about when you listen to him speak, there's a couple things that always jump out to me. Number one is that he always refers to it as Ottawa Gatineau, always, always, and that's his attempt to say we need to do a better job of
Reaching out.
reaching out and attracting and speaking to those fans on the Gatineau side of the river that maybe we haven't paid attention to is what he's saying. So that's important. And I always love the things that he says, and he talked about this with the arena. And he always says, you know, that he said in his opening press conference back in September that he isn't really the owner of this team.
Yeah.
He's a caretaker. He's the steward of the team. The city owns it. The fans own it. And that's to me, the best way to look at it, because I think a professional sports franchise isn't just a grocery store chain or a, you know, regular business. It's public, like it's almost like a public institution that like it's embedded in the hearts and minds of the people of the community. And when you mess with that, all bets are off the table. And unfortunately, we've lived through that in this market, but he seems to understand it, that he's just the guy sort of stewarding this. But it's the will of the people. It's talks about it with the arena. It's like it's not for me, It's what do the fans want? Where do they want this building? Where do we see ourselves? And he's like, it's not for this generation, it's for the next generation. Like he's very, you know, very much he seems aware of that. And I think for most people that have had interactions with him, I know Claire Hanna spent a good chunk of time with him in Montreal, and we're always just blown. Like he's just a regular guy. Like sometimes I feel like asking him, like, how are you so normal? Like you just seem too normal. Because I feel like I'm pretty normal, but I don't have billions of dollars at my disposal. Because usually I find, generally speaking, to accumulate that amount of wealth, you need to have a sort of killer instinct, a maniacal almost side of your personality. And when you talk, I remember when his name first surfaced as a potential owner, this would have been like, gosh, November of 2022. I reached out and I connected with some people who actually worked at his Andlauer Healthcare, like Andlauer Transportation. And they like the stories they told me, they're like, you don't understand. Like this guy will come in and just hang out in the warehouse and talk to workers and try and figure out what's going on the ground level. Are you being treated okay? Is everything okay? Like how, like, you know, and that really stuck with me. Like that people said he is the type of boss you want at the top of an org chart. And this was not from the hockey team, this was from his other business. And I thought, yeah, this is exactly what they need, is somebody at the top of a culture setter that can do it right from the top.
I'd be remiss to not speak about best in class, because that statement from Ann has really got a lot of traction with the fan base, with other fan bases on Twitter. He said, you know, in your most recent article, you know, we're not best in class, we're far from it, we're not even close, but spoke about trying to change that culture and that it takes time. Where do you see, like, knowing this team, knowing the organization, the behind the scenes stuff that, you know, I've seen a little bit this year on the beat, but not as well as you, do you sense that this organization is getting a bit closer to that best in class, all around?
Yeah, but it's going to take time. And he said that. And I think, you know, given where they were 18 months ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, if you measure it against that, yeah, they've taken strides. But I liked when he said, we're not best in class, we're not even close. Because can you imagine, like, let's just take a moment. Let's pretend he told me the opposite. Let's pretend he said, you know what? We've done it. Let's hang the mission accomplished banner. We are best in class. And you'd be like, well, hang on. You just had a season in which you finished, you know, basically at the bottom of the standings. You fired your coach, you fired your GM, you had all these stuff going on, but now you're best in class. I don't think so. So I think he knows that, you know, there's an like to redo the culture of an organization takes time. You're not going to go in and overnight do it. So I think like he kind of stressed that, like, my first year as the owner, I was going to be in observation mode. I was going to learn. And I think that some of the things he learned are that, yeah, this culture wasn't great and we need to change the way we do some things. So I would say, like, I'd like to see where they are a year from now. Like, I'd like to fast forward to May of 2025. Where are they at? How did Travis Green do? How did, you know, their whatever they do on the business side, whatever they do on you know, all hockey ops and all these things, where are they at? And the key is always keep that idea that the fans are the ones that really sort of are the heartbeat of this team. And if you have their trust, you're in a good spot. And so I still think he's got the trust of the fans. I do. But it's 7 years of not making the playoffs, 7 years of dysfunction, 7 years of all that. But he inherited a lot of it. And I think people are willing to say, okay, you inherited a lot of things. Now you get your fresh start. Let's fresh slate. Let's see where you take this thing in the next 18 months.
Ian, I just looked into a crystal ball, and in May of next year, it's going to be Leafs Sens second round. So I just actually I can't put the Leafs in the second round because they never.
Yeah.
But my bad on that. I think the crystal ball was lying to me a little bit there. You wrote about the arena deal, and I'll just
Yeah.
ask you a little bit about that because I know you've been so plugged in on that. I remember reading your article, I think 2 years ago, about it, or arena potentially coming to right beside me in Sandy Hill. I'm still on that train if it's still alive. Where do you think the arena goes? It seems as though the NCC and the Senators are progressing, but they could go somewhere else with the owner and also the payment, and just maybe discuss a little bit about your article that broke this morning.
Yeah, I think what happened was in 2022 and into 2023, as the sale process of the Senators sort of unfolded, and it was very long and protracted and took months. What happened was, I think a lot of the groups that were interested were looking at this more as a real estate play than a hockey purchase. Like, and so they were the ones that were looking at certain parcels of land and thinking, I think we could do it here, I think we could do it there. And so I think Andlauer was more like, hey, I just want the hockey team. We'll deal with the arena when we get to that point. And so I think he's a little bit more patient than everybody else, but he understands, okay, you got to, again, got to remember, this is a guy who grew up in Montreal and grew up as a Habs fan. So he either would have gone to the Forum on St. Catherine Street, or now, as minority owner of the Montreal Canadiens, you're going right into the heart of downtown Montreal to watch games at the Bell Centre. There's an electricity that you get at most arenas in North America. Like, you step off of a subway or a train, and there's just a buzz. There's this awesome feeling. You get it in Vancouver. You get it everywhere except for three or four places, and Ottawa is one of them. So I think he knows that at the end of the day, 10 or 15 years from now, you want that downtown buzz and that feeling. Just a question of, where does this make the most sense? Is it LeBreton, which is a plot of land that's sitting there empty? Is it another spot downtown? Is it Bayview? Is it like, so I do think, though, that we're heading towards a conclusion here, at least as it pertains to the LeBreton Flats chapter. And I think we're going to know by early, like in and around Labor Day. Is this happening or not? It behooves the Senators and the NCC. If you're going to do this, let's go ahead. If you're not, if you're the NCC, you got to say, okay, guys, you had one crack in the previous regime, whatever. Now we've given you a second crack and you've had 2 years. Maybe this just isn't, the stars aren't going to align. And then if you're Andlauer, you have other options. You have what the city of Ottawa might be able to offer you. So I do think that there's a conclusion coming in the next, I'll call it 12 to 16 weeks, of whether or not this is going to happen at LeBreton Flats. I'd be shocked if there's another extension on the deadline. I'm never say never, but my guess would be you're going to know by September if this thing's going to at least proceed to the next step at LeBreton Flats.
And with that, I know in your article, he and I were talked about maybe it not being fully private money. Maybe where would that stand in terms of payments and who's paying for the arena here in Ottawa?
Yeah, and I think, he pointed to the private public partnerships in Alberta, and I think, that seems like a fair model. Like, and Mark Sutcliffe, the Ottawa mayor, I chatted with him, and he said, look, we're not interested in writing, hey, here's a check for 200 million and it's a giant novelty check and we're going to stand in front of a press conference and hand over $200 million. But they're absolutely open to the idea of, okay, well, maybe we do float you $180 million, but guess what? You're going to pay it back, and you can pay that back in a myriad of ways. You can add a $4 surcharge to the ticket, or whatever the number ends up being. So every person that buys a ticket to an event at the arena, you get that. Maybe you work in, maybe the city of Ottawa as part of the deal. Let's say you get naming rights to the building, then maybe that's part of the way you pay back the loan or what. There's ways to do this where you're not just where you're borrowing or using city money, but you're not reaching into the hands of taxpayers to do it, because I just don't think there's an appetite, given the, I guess we'll call it issues in infrastructure, education, hospitals, etc., to all of a sudden just say, okay, we're going to prioritize this. But there's also an appetite for people to say, okay, we want a downtown arena. And there is an element of civic pride that goes with it. I think there's a, like Ann Lauer seems like a reasonable guy. I think one of the quotes he gave me was something along the lines of, hey, I'm not going to say these are my terms, take it or leave it. So I think, you know, Sutcliffe seems like a reasonable guy. The NCC is a bit of a wild card. Like, I don't know them, to be honest. And they're almost this sort of shadowy group that
Lucid.
operates behind closed doors. And I don't know what their motives are or what they're thinking, but they seem like everything they say publicly is we want to make a deal, we're flexible, all of that. So we'll see. But yeah, I think a private public partnership probably seems to make the most sense here, and we'll see how it plays out.
Well, I hope they get a downtown arena soon, and I'm sure, as you said, it will just make the team just, I think, thrive. And hopefully there'll be a long, a lot of winning when the arena finally touches ground. I could also see them being terrible at the same time, just knowing Senators fans luck. But in the best transition I possibly can from Ann Lauer, I'm going to go to, before I let you go, Ian, and thanks again for taking so much time doing this. I'm going to transition to a little bit of a trivia question in
Oh
honor of
boy.
Brian Gibbons. For people who don't know, he scored 14 points in 20 games with the Senators in
Gibby.
the dark days. So my question to you on that note of Senators scoring a lot in a short period of time is, which Senator has scored the most amount of points for the Senators, but played less than 100 games for the Senators in that time period?
So most
Points, but they
points.
with the Senators, but has only played less than 100 games with the Senators.
So my first thought is the cat,
It's
Alex DeBrincat.
a very good guess, but
No good.
he is no good. He is third on the list in points.
Okay, that was my boy. Because yeah, DeBrincat played all 82 games and had like, it's funny, he had like 27 goals, didn't he?
27 goals, 66 points.
So somebody has more than 66 points but played fewer than 100 games.
I'll give you a hint because it's so, like, I had never heard of this guy, but I know you.
Wait, wait, okay, wait. Just a quick question. Matt Duchene played more than 100 games though, right?
He did,
Okay,
yes.
because he would, you know what? Matt Duchene was like almost a point a game guy.
He played, I think, 130. I need to go back and check, but yeah. So
Okay,
you're
so
so
guys that played fewer than
100 games. There,
man,
so to break it,
DeBrincat was the like the guy that just jumped out.
he was number three on the list. So you're
DeBrincat was number
missing two
three.
players. One, I will give you the number one spot just for references in the 90s, early 90s.
What was it like early 90s, like expansion era, like early on?
Yes.
Because like oh, man, they traded him to LA and he was unreal. Like he was all-star their second year, Kudelski. But I don't know how many games he played, but Bob Kudelski was like a goal machine for this team.
Is that your answer?
I feel like he would have played fewer than 100 games. And I feel like he was like a fifth, like I feel like he scored 50 goals for Ottawa in a tight window. So yes. Bob Kudelski is my answer. I don't feel super confident, but I feel like he would have had more point. Now that I think about it, I feel like he would have had more points than DeBrincat because he had like 50 goals. So yes, I'll say Bob Kudelski.
You are, I don't know how you do this, Ian. Every single time, you are so good at this. Bob Kudelski had 47 goals and 76 points in 90 games for the Ottawa Senators.
Wow.
You want to know who's two on the list?
Okay, this is a long shot. Duclair's not on there, is he? Like that was another guy I was thinking of.
He's up there. He's up there.
Is he?
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think of guys that played fewer than like that's the tricky part. Who's is this next guy like a 90s guy again?
No, recent.
Recently. Man. I keep thinking of David LeGrand. I know it's not David Legault. Gee. Boy, 100 games.
He is still in the NHL. He was in the playoffs this year. He was traded to a playoff team from a bad team.
This year?
Yes. Played in the
Oh.
playoffs. Played in the Atlantic, or a team in the Atlantic Division.
In the playoffs?
Yeah.
Man. Boy, I'm blanking on this one. Did he get traded to Boston?
Nope.
See, I keep thinking of Duclair. Like he
You
because he got
put that
traded
as an
to the
answer, Ian.
what's that?
You can put him as an answer.
Duclair?
Yep.
I'll say Duclair.
That is it. I don't know how you do this, Ian. It's him.
But I said, didn't I said Duclair earlier,
Yeah, but
remember?
I didn't know if that was a guess, Ian.
Oh.
Yeah, no.
How many points did he have? Like, cause
He
he
had.
like I was like I, he was DeBrincat and Duclair were the guys that came to mind.
Man, you got it so quick. Yeah, he had 54 points in like 90 games. So,
50. So wait, no. So then DeBrincat was second then.
yes, my bad. Yeah.
Okay.
So
So
that
I wasn't
means.
that far off on the cat.
No, you were not.
Cat was the first name that I thought of, like right
Yeah.
off the hop.
Wow.
Oh man. No, but no, you know what? But you described Kudelski to me. You're like early 90s, and I was like, okay, that's the guy.
But how do you remember it, Ian? Because you were in Vancouver, weren't you?
No, I would have come over. I came to journalism school in 94,
Okay,
kind of right in the heart of
he
the
ended
Kudelski.
his last year was in 94 with the
Yeah.
Sun. So you weren't
Nah,
in.
he got, I think, did he got get traded around the All-Star game, maybe? Like, but he was just on a crazy heater with this team. Like, it was insane. Like, all he did was score goals.
And those teams were winning what, 10 games a year? I don't know how they.
Oh, whatever it was. Like, he was, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Ian, I think ending on the high of you getting Bob Kudelski is probably the best way to wrap up this podcast
Yeah.
in trivia. Is there, before I let you go, is there anything you want to plug for The Athletic or anything coming up that people you want people to listen or read?
Oh man. See, now you're putting pressure on me to make it seem like I should be working. No, you know what? Like, no, like I mean the Andlauer piece and talking to Mark Sutcliffe, the mayor, and reaching out the NCC, that's something that I spent 8 or 9 days kind of putting together and trying to reach out to people. So that was kind of my big project for this week. And so that would be it for in terms of like anything on the front burner. I'm excited to go to the draft in Vegas in June. So we'll have a lot of coverage kind of leading up to that, maybe looking at who Ottawa should pick at seven and that type of thing. But yeah, like that to me is the next big thing is that week leading up to the draft.
Well, that'll be a fun time. I'm sure you've probably written a lot of draft profiles and looked at the draft many times in your day. I still remember the time you had the thing on 1200 with guessing the draft lottery and where the Senators would pick. And
2020. Yeah.
yeah. But I just want to, you're the best, Ian. You cover this team so well, and hopefully you can finally cover this team as a writer in the playoffs. That would be pretty fun.
It's coming next spring or the one after.
Yeah, we
Let's
got
do it.
it. We got it.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much, Ian, for doing this, and everyone check out Ian's work at The Athletic, and we'll do this again.
All right. Thanks for having me.